All right, you guys, how are you doing today? Thank you for being here. Go get what you need to get. I
It was
will not be
me.
there. Hold on one second here. There, you can chat away if you want to, privately or publicly. If you see your friends, have at it. Bill was reading at the beginning of the session was Emotional Sobriety from the AA book, Language of the Heart, page 236. It was a question I got in the chat from Trevor. So there you go, Trevor. Open. Oh, sorry. This was supposed to go public. You guys have the ability to unmute if you would like to chat a little bit. Not all at the same time, please. And if you have too many background noise, be aware. But if you just want to say hi.
Hi, Arpa. Are you sitting there at your computer? It's Leslie. Just checking in.
I'm here.
Yep, I'm here, Leslie. I hear you. Hope you have a
Right,
good
good.
day.
I am. Thank you. Love you.
Love you.
Have a bear claw. Is absolutely fabulous.
Okay. Hi, Leon. I see you waving. I just wave back. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
Good morning. Where are you from? Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Westlake Village, California.
Nice, California. I'm in San Francisco Bay Area, you guys.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we have clear skies and we can breathe. This is good.
That is good. It's
Welcome.
about time. Yeah.
Happy to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Yes, you guys, this is being recorded. Jim will put it in the chat. There's three places you can go for our recordings. MSBrecording.com, AmotAudio.com, and Recovery Tapers. AmotAudio also has the ASL, American Sign Language version of what we have done. We have other emotional sobrieties. You can all listen to them at no cost. And it will turn up in the chat as soon as Jim is cutting and pasting it in there. Right, Jim? Yes, I can see you laughing. Jim's got it. And you can also find flyers on those websites for events if you like to join events. The tapers have it up. They're good. There it is. Look under AWB Roundups or Al-Anon Without Borders Zoom, and you will find the recordings by date. They all have it slightly different, so you just have to take a look, whatever works for you. So yeah, what else I got?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Hi, I just was wondering what I don't really know what I've sort of stumbled upon. It seems really pretty.
You stumbled upon a workshop that's called Emotional Sobriety.
Yeah.
Until 12:45. And Luther W. Palm Springs is facilitating it. It's an AA workshop. So welcome. And then after that, at 1 o'clock, we'll do the relationships from the Al-Anon with Mary Pearl from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh wow. Well, that's great because I qualify for both programs. So
Yeah. Mary Pearl is a hoot. And yeah, so say that again.
I'm from San Francisco also.
Oh, yay. Yeah. If you go
Me
to
too.
MSB Recording, you can check out our flyer. We've got several workshops coming up.
I would love to. And you said someone just posted where I can listen to more recordings.
Yeah, it's in the chat. And if you want to sign up for our flyers, it's well, I let Jim put it in the awbroundup@gmail.com.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Send us an email and say sign up, and we'll send you the link to sign up.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Another thing that we have coming up for those who are curious is a Native American conference with AA participation. We have Don C. from Colorado Springs talk about how they translated AA, how they translated the 12 steps into Native rituals, Native medicine and working the 12 steps, also by Don C. We also have Rod, who was the first Navajo delegate and trustee in AA, and it's AA and Al-Anon. So we're going to talk about the generational effects of shame and guilt. We're going to talk about don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. That will be October 17th and 18th between 10 and about 3 o'clock. And if you're signed up on our list, you will get the flyer. If you want the flyer, just send us an email at awbroundup@gmail.com, and we'll just send you the flyer. And Mary Pearl this afternoon will be interpreted not only in American Sign Language, but she will also be interpreted into Spanish. We have Spanish translation. So she will do part one of the traditions and relationships, and then next week she will do part two. She'll walk you through those traditions. Billy says he's going to distribute the flyer tonight. That means he's going to mass email it out. So if you sign up before tonight, you'll probably catch it in the batch. But
Yvonne, may I ask a question? Did you say the email address is awbroundup@gmail.com?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm putting it in there right now. I can't talk and type. I can do a lot of things and talk, but not type. There's an AW
roundup. Understand.
I can talk, but I can't type and talk. That is something I'm not able to do. So there it is. Just shoot us an email. And if you need any addresses or phone numbers of our speakers or past speakers for either program, just and I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hi.
Hey, wonderful to see you. And Luther. Golly. I've had a really rough past 2 weeks with family sadness and issues and so on. And I needed you this morning. I don't remember the last time I laughed and cried so much within 1 hour period. So it's been such a blessing. And I just want to thank you for everything. I copied all your funny jokes down and I'm passing them on to give lightness to other people too. So love being with you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Margaret. That's very sweet. Thank you. Great place there. Yeah.
There used to be an event in California North, up Auburn Way. It was called, it was the Solutions Weekend, and it was called Emotional Sobriety Weekend. And they had five of them. And one of them was with Luther. 1 year was Luther. It started off with Wayne B. He did the first one. And then, Ron D did another one, Luther did one, and Astrid A did one, and the other one I forgot. And so I remembered that, and I thought, God, I still hate that they stopped those weekends. Those were fabulous weekends. I just loved it up in Auburn. And that's where I got to know Luther. And I close most of my talks with a story about Timmy, and that is plagiarized from Luther. I took that CD and replayed it because that made me cry so much that weekend. It still makes me cry sometimes. I still.
I'm gonna read it again today.
What?
I'm going to read it again today.
Yeah. I was saying to somebody, I said, you love that story so much. I said, well, you're going to hear the original from Luther because I stole that from Luther. Mm-hmm. Oh. I don't know. Billy, are you reading the chat? Can you read that? Can you see Dimps now? She can't get her sound. I'm not. That's a private email. It's a private mail. It's Dimpna's iPad. I would say sign out and sign in again and check your mute. So Anna, yes, all the events on our flyers are.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? That we're going to send you an email. I did. And then what?
And
thank you.
Program, right? And then that's when I said, hey, it's
kind yes, of- all our flyers are Pacific time, Pacific Standard Time. So for those who are curious about that, I can confirm that. Next week, we've got Polly P from Jacksonville doing emotional sobriety for AA. And then Mary Pearl will do the second part of the traditions. On November 7th, we have the Traditions in Relationships with Corey L. Ellen C. had to cancel for medical reasons. But Corey L. from Batumka, Alabama, will be doing the Traditions in Relationships. And Debbie D. from Concord will be doing Emotional Sobriety. And then November 14th, we will do Emotional Sobriety with Paula G. from Champaign, Illinois, and Carla R. from Tujunga, California. And then Sally Ann from New Zealand will be doing Resolving Conflict. That's what we got so far. And then the Native American Conference that is coming up.
I went to the steps and he started working with me on the step, kind of like that to get it, you know, because that's what he did, didn't he, Luther? He got you right into the step. Yeah, right.
All right. So good.
Ready to Zoom or no?
Go ahead if you want to restart. I'm good with it. It is 13 past 10. Well, on my clock.
Oh, all right. So let's see. I think I just met up with Clint and all of that. So so we started out on this journey, he and I. And you know, the thing of it all is we are very resistant to change a lot of times. And remember, I had 25 years. And I'm reminded of the story of Anthony DeMello tells, you know, about the drunk by the River Thames. And he tells the story about him bedding down for the night, covering himself up with newspapers and stuff like that. And so just about when he's about to fall off asleep, it's dark, it's cold, he's by the river, and this Rolls Royce pulls up. And this woman inside rolls down her window, and she says, "What are you doing?" He says, I'm going to sleep. And she said, "There? All night?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Not tonight, you're not." She said, "Charles, you go get him. Get him in the car here." So he goes and gets him and brings him in the car. And they take him out to her house in the country. And they go through the kitchen door. And she said, "There's a little bedroom back there. There's shower. There's this and that. You go in there and you take care of yourself. So, by the way, Charles will give you a haircut afterward." You know, so that's what happened. You know, he did all of that. And he's laying in there in the bed. And it's nice and warm. And there's a little lamp light there. And he's thinking, my God, how did this happen, you know? And so she comes down for a glass of milk, and she remembers. She sees a light under his door. And so she goes over and taps on the door, and he says, come in. And so she's just standing there in the doorway. And you can sort of see through her negligee, you know, there in the doorway. And she said, oh, my, you really clean up well. You look so good. And she said, did you get enough to eat? Oh, yeah, Charles gave me some. And you look great. Look at that haircut and so on and so forth. And so clean, right? And he says, I cannot thank you enough, you know. And she says, well, good night. So she starts to leave, and then she turns around. And she said, would you like a little company? And he cannot believe his good fortune, you know. So she starts into the bedroom, and he keeps scooching over in the bed there. And then he falls into the River Thames. He'd been dreaming all along, see? And that's what you and I have been doing, dreaming all along, this friggin' nightmare. And so we're a little resistant to change until we've been thrown into the cold water. Sorry, I had to tell that little story. So anyhow, here, let's see here. Let's say we get down to serious business because we have a lot of ground to cover. So you can hang around a train station all day thinking you're taking a trip, folks, but you ain't taking a trip until you get on that train, right? So by the way, Clint gave me a prayer, because I was sober a long time, and you know, I had my routine, and he said he gave me a prayer from a guy that I knew who lived in Aurora, Colorado, named Don Pritz. Don Pritz was brilliant. He was a storyteller. He always said, we're storytellers and healers. Healers and storytellers. That's who we are, you know. So he was in prison and going to work these steps. And his sponsor said, you know, Don, you're smart. We need to contrive or concoct a prayer for you. Well, you can set everything aside here. You don't have to throw it away. Just set it aside for now, you know, and so that we can have a new experience. So the prayer was, dear God, please let me set aside everything I think I know about you, about me, about this program, and about these steps for an open mind and a new experience of you, of me, of this program, and of these steps. And he said, don't forget the amen. The amen is what sets everything in motion. You know, it's an acknowledgement that I just gave this to my Father, you know, in whose trusting hands I can give something today. You know, I'll tell you something. I've come to a place in my sobriety and in life itself that I'm never alone anymore. Can't be alone, you know. I'm going to show you something here that became so important for me. Okay, Chuck C. also made this analogy. God is the circle itself. All the little dots in there are people and universes and whatever and blah, 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 blah. Good, God, and life, it's all the same word, okay? Everything in this universe and all the universes belong constitutes God, period. Now, you and I think you can be that dot on the outside of this circle at times. And it's possible as an experience, but it is not reality. You cannot be outside the circle. You know, none of us can be. That is the law. That's just the way it's all constructed. So through that analogy, I was able to discover that I was not alone, you know, and other things along, you know, on my journey, discovering that I was not alone. So we launched into this process here of finding God, and step two was so instrumental and so important to me. I was given a few tasks to, by the way, the set-aside prayer there, I was to say that every single morning and every single night. I could say other prayers if I wanted to, but don't forget that one, you know? What that enabled me to do was to stay in this, stay inside here and not get outside of this circle. One of the assignments that I was given was to look over the chapter and chapter two, I mean, in step two, to look that over and go through that chapter with a fine tooth comb and to take all of the capitalized words there. And if it's a capitalized word, by the way, that means it's a noun, it's important. And the words were like creative intelligence, supreme being, power, God, great reality, so on and so forth. Then Glenn asked me to write down my personal definition of those words, to not give him a textbook definition of those, to just write down what those meant to me down deep inside where I live. So, by the way, I mean, by the time we got to sharing this information, I discovered while I'm looking at it that every single one of those, I had several definitions for each one. But, and also in every definition, I had the word God. And through looking at that, I realized that, wait a minute here. All the names we have given God down through the centuries, you know, it doesn't matter what you call him. There's only one God. The male gets forwarded. Call him the great reality. Call him whatever. It doesn't matter what you call him. There is only one God, you know. And, oh, my God, that was so important for me to find out. And so I'm going to read this to you because I said to you earlier that power is within you. It's also within me. You know, when I realized that the great reality, you know, it's just we found the great reality deep within us. In the last analysis, it says it's only there that it may be found, you know? So it's not outside of me anymore. I don't pray to anything outside of me. I pray with something that's within me, you know, that indwelling presence, that indwelling power. So you see how we can, in this vast universe of ours, we cannot be alone. We have something within us, that divine spark, that gift to us at the foundation of the universe. It's in every single living person. So if it's in you and me, I want to read you this little story. It's Yvonne's favorite here. Abe, it's about Timmy and Abe, okay? Abe was fiercely independent, even at the age of 85. But after a mild stroke, his son insisted he move in with him. Abe missed going to the park near his old apartment. And one Saturday, he set out to find it. When he became disoriented, he asked a young boy where the park was. The boy, named Timmy, said he'd like to take Abe there, but he didn't have time because he was looking for God. He needed to talk to him about why his parents were getting a divorce. Maybe God's in the park, said the old man. I'd like to talk to him, too, about why he's made me useless. They set off together to find God. At the park, Timmy began to cry about the divorce, and Abe lovingly held the boy's face in his hands and looked him straight in the eyes. Timmy, I don't know why bad things happen, but I know it's not because of you. I know you're a good boy, and your parents love you, and you'll be okay. Timmy says, are you sure? And he says, I'm sure. Timmy gave Abe a big hug and said, I'm so glad I met you. Thanks. I think I can go now. From across the street, Timmy's mother saw them hug. And when the boy came up, she asked in a worried voice, who was that old man? I think he's God. Did he say that? She demanded. No. But when he told me I'm going to be okay, I felt better. Only God can do that. When Abe got home, his son, in a scolding voice, asked, where were you? I was in the park with God. What makes you think you were with God? Because he sent me a boy who needed me. And when the boy hugged me, I felt God telling me I wasn't useless. So you see, we're here for one another. That's what we're here for, to help each other along, to pull one another along, to share my experience, strength, and hope with you in love, to assure you that you're not alone, that we're all in this thing together here, and it's incumbent on all of us to discover this power. And I know something about the generosity of God today, okay? If you don't make the discovery, he will make the discovery. We're in this thing. We're in this realm. We're in God's world here, you know? He will reveal himself to you over and over and over, see? The problem is with us, we can't hardly see it half the time. We don't, we're so blind, you know? That's one of my prayers as well, you know? Please help me see. Please help me hear you today, you know? Here's another little thing. It says, the man whispered, God speak to me in the metal harp, saying, but the man did not hear. So the man yelled, God speak to me, and the thunder rolled across the sky, but the man did not listen. The man looked around and said, God, let me see you. And a star shined brightly, but the man did not notice. And the man shouted, God, show me a miracle. And a life was born, but the man did not know. So the man cried out in despair, touch me, God, let me know that you're here. Whereupon God reached down and touched the man, but the man brushed the butterfly away and walked on. And it says, don't miss out on a blessing because it isn't packaged as you expect, you know? So I pray a lot of times, keep my mind open, keep my eyes open, keep my ears open. Let me see, because Don Pritz, the guy in Colorado, also said, God uses whatever's at hand, Luther. He'll use the next poem, the next music, the next television. I'm not talking about a psychosis here, okay? What I'm talking about is pay attention to your world and what's happening in your world and the benefits that are coming out of it and the generosity of God himself. He's showering it on us every single day. You just have to see it. So when you don't like this person in front of you enough, try to see the God in that person, because that power is in that person just as much as it is within you. Sometimes it's really difficult to see it. People try our patience. We get mad. We cuss. We carry on. We have fights and whatever. This program is fabulous. It takes us to a place of emotional sobriety where I can sit down with you and I can tell you I'm sorry. You know why? I don't want to be at odds with anybody today. I do not want to go to bed tonight with anything on my mind that I didn't take care of during the day. You know, I can't do it. And in our 10th step, it talks about promptly. You know, if I will do that promptly, do I want to do it all the time? No. This old bag over here that lives near to me is just, she really tries my patience a lot. And I finally blocked her on my email and I blocked her on my phone and stuff like, and then I come full circle to it, to the point that I think, oh my God. So I have to lift the blockage and lift whatever, because I'm in a position of responsibility here. I'm the president, of course. They always give us the keys and give us all the money, right? So I'm the president of the homeowners association here, and like it or not, that's part of my job, you know? So, but anyway, that's, so I wanted to read you something else, too, about having faith. And I've got to tell you something about me, anyway. I have tons of faith, tons of it, okay? But I've also gone past faith. I've gone to another place. I've gone to a place of trust, because God either is or he isn't. That's what we find out in this second step, right? He's everything or he's nothing. Which is it? That's the choice that I'm given. So I have to trust this power. And I'll tell you that reason. I have to trust it because I can't see my way. I'm just a little kid at some level. I'm stumbling along here. I don't have the power to get out of whatever I'm into or whatever, you know. So I have to trust this power. I can't see my way. But, you know, and, you know, we're in a troubled world nowadays. And my idea the other day when I was listening to some politics, which I don't advise anybody to get into nowadays, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, God is bigger than all of this, okay? And I trust that. I absolutely trust that. So here's a little thing. I got it on a card. Somebody sent it to me in the mail. It says, the fields were parched and brown. The crops lay wilting from thirst. Local ministers called for an hour of prayer on the town square, asking everyone to bring an object of faith or for inspiration. The townspeople filled the square with anxious faces and hopeful hearts. a variety of objects clutched in prayerful hands, holy books, crosses, rosaries. When the hour ended, as if on command, a soft rain began to fall. Cheers swept the crowd as they held their treasured objects high in gratitude and praise. One faith symbol seemed to overshadow all the others. A 9-year-old child had brought an umbrella. So see, trust the power. Trust this process. It will not lead you astray. I'm telling you that from my own experience over the last 48 plus years, okay? So, and once you get onto something like this, you can't let go of it. It's too fabulous. You get so excited about it, you can't hardly stand it, you know? And like I said earlier, God uses every single thing that's at hand, you know? He'll use the movie. I love that movie, Contact. You know, that movie Contact with Jodie Foster. And after she's gone on this trip through space and so on and so forth, you know, and they're trying to, James Woods is trying to make her say it didn't happen. Why don't you just say it didn't happen, you know? Because she said, she said, because I can't. I had an experience. I can't prove it. I can't even explain it. But everything that I know as a human being, everything that I am tells me that it was real. I was given something wonderful, something that changed me forever, a vision of the universe that tells us how tiny and insignificant and rare and precious we all are, a vision that tells us that we belong to something that is greater than ourselves, that we are not, that none of us are alone. I wish I could share that. I wish that everyone, that if even for one moment, could feel that awe and humility and hope. And then she says, and that continues to be my wish. And that's my wish for all of us today. Again, I want to tell you something. I don't walk out over the water, okay? I am not. I'm not some superhuman being here, you know. I'm a normal person here, and that's why our program for Al-Anon and alcoholics alike is so important. You know, we have a way to go. If I hurt your feelings, I will beg you to forgive me if I have to. I don't care about pride and all that arrogance crap anymore. I don't care. I want to come out even at the end of the day, you know. So anyway, and I'm here to tell you that once you find, you know, going through that second step in that book and everything here, it there's a page on a page, I think it's 45 there, that says where and how to find this power, okay? And then you flip over. It's all in the book. You just got to find it. Open up your eyes and do a little bit of searching. This is a textbook. You know, you just don't you don't get the information through osmosis. You got to get in there and do a little work sometimes. So on page 45, it says, where and how to find this power. Over on page 55, it says, remember we had the little 18 to 20 capitalized words, right? Every one of them meant God. One of those words is great reality. And it says here, we found the great reality deep within us. And then it says, in the final analysis, it is only there that it may be found. You know, what a statement. That is a promise. Hold on to that. It will come to you. The consciousness of the presence of God will come to you. That's what these some 100 people were saying in the very beginning of our book, you know. The consciousness of the most of the presence of God was the most important fact in their lives today. And that's why we don't want this book changed. We don't want it rewritten. Yes, we've been to the moon. Who cares? It only says that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we predicted that and it happened, you know. So we are not outdated, folks. So let's see here. Let's move along here before we get crazy here. Okay, so where am I? Yeah, I get carried away here. Okay, so we had Timmy. Oh, yeah. forsake. So let's move on to step three here, which is so important. And you know, here's one thing that I hear in many meetings, in both meetings, Al-Anon and also Alcoholics Anonymous. They say, oh, it's only a decision. You know, the third step is nothing, blah, 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 blah. Just, you know, it's only a decision. You know, I beg to differ with you. It's not just a decision. It's something very, very pertinent here, okay? When I'm taking people through these steps, I want them to make sure they understand what they're doing here, because like I said earlier, we are not dealing with a capricious God. We're dealing with something where once we do this, we can never undo it. Once we fully understand what we have done here, we have turned our will and our lives over to this power. And as it was explained to me, it was like firing a gun, that once it's been fired, you cannot unfire it if you fully understand it, okay? So at some level, my life is none of my business anymore. And generally when I'm working with somebody, and even on Zoom, I'll kneel down with somebody and we'll say this prayer together, you know, and that's what was done with me. Clint Hodges got down on his knees with me and put his arm around me and we said it together, you know? He loved me and I loved him. He was like, we were like blood, I got to tell you. So I want people to understand it. And I'm not bad mouthing anybody, okay? But I go to meetings where people are saying the third and the fifth step all the time. And I don't believe in that, okay? And I'll tell you why. The third step prayer is for a reason. I need to say that prayer. If you notice something about the prayer, it doesn't have an amen at the end of it. And what's happened here is we have an open-ended agreement at some level, you know? And I need to know that I'm still in a state of prayer even when I get up and do a fourth and fifth step. Because every single thing that can rain down, rains down during the fourth step and the fifth step, okay? So I don't say that prayer capriciously. You know, I'm not saying don't say it. I mean, try it out loud, pray if you want to. But I understand the meaning behind it. I need to know that I'm in a state of prayer. You know, it's like today, the way I understand steps 10, 11, and 12 here is that I'm in a constant state of prayer. When I check in at night, when I review my day, and I go through that process, it's kind of like an open-ended agreement, because I ask God at the very end of that 10th step how does it read where it says, what corrective measures should be taken? I have asked God a question. What corrective measures should be taken? And if I got up to that point during my 10th step at night, which I do in bed, by the way, I'm laying down there, you know. If I got through that and up to that point, I'm pretty much going to go to sleep at that time. And I believe that God is at work while I'm sleeping, okay? It's sort of like Archimedes, you know, he leaped out of it. Eureka, I found it, you know. His brain was at work, even while he was sleeping. So anyway, and when I wake up in the morning, I've been given a tremendous gift. And that gift is that I would start my day connecting to the power, and understanding that I've been through in the power all night, you know. So I'm in a state of what I call a continuum. I'm not talking about being goody-goody, folks. I'm not goody-goody. I make all kinds of mistakes and stuff throughout the day, and I have to apologize and whatever, blah, 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 as time goes on. But, you know, what else? I have to let myself off the hook, too, at some level, because I'm doing the very best I can at all times. I know that when I know better, I will do better. And I'm only given as much as I can handle in any day of anything, of goodness, badness, or whatever, you know. So, anyway, we got into step four here, which it warns everybody, you know, that nobody's going to fully recover until they've revealed themselves to somebody else. Like I told you early, My sponsor today knows every single thing there is to know about me. I have no secrets anymore, you know. So I was able to write down all my resentments, my fears, my sex inventory. And you know what? I want to tell you something about the sex inventory. Listen. I woke up with people I wouldn't even have lunch with today, okay? So I had a lot of that going on, a lot of very bad relationships and so on and so forth. And that's not what's important about the sex inventory at all. What the sex inventory reveals is how Luther Wood thinks he should treat another human being in his life. That's what it's all about. It's not about sex. Period. Because that number 9 there, it says, what should I have done instead? If you're looking at that guy's list, what should I have done instead? You will be able to read between the lines. You will be able to read underneath here and see what he really means, you know, and to help him not commit the same thing over and over and over and over, you know. And in my, let's see here if I can find it right off the bat. Oh, of course, I can't find anything when I'm looking for it. But what it meant at the very end of all of that is for anybody in my life, like Pat Wood, for instance, that I would be considerate and loving and kind. And that's what it's all about. That's like living with another human being, which you guys, again, have shown me over and over and over on how to do, you know. So anyhow, I'm not going to go into all of that at great detail, except for when I was, okay, I wrote this fourth step as if I were never going to read it to anybody. Okay. In other words, every single thing in my life was on that page, on that paper. I got so upset during it. I thought, I can't stand this. You know, I was 25 years sober, and I was down on the beach one day with one of my sponsees, Sam, and I had tears in my eyes, and I said, I don't know if I'm going to live through this. I had never written stuff like that down, incriminating stuff down on a piece of paper, you know. And when I related that to Clint, he said, he just laughed. He said, well, that's the idea. You know, all of the old has to go, all of it for the new to come, you know. So he said it all has to die. And so when I got this all on paper, and put it in a large manila envelope. I'm not one to get on my knees a lot, you know, because I found out in that second step there that if that divine power, that indwelling power is within me. Clint said something very peculiar to me at that point. He says, do you realize that this ground you're standing on is holy? It blew my mind. And I got it, though. If that power, that indwelling power is within me, I'm standing on holy ground. I better be really careful where I take that power going forward, you know, being very, very respectful of that, you know. So when I got that fourth step completed, I got down on my knees at that point. And I started to cry, and I thank God for the ability to get all of that on a piece of paper. I knew it was all in there, every dirty little crappy piece, and some of the good too, because it says all of it, you know. And so, the next morning, of course, on my way over to Clint's house, Elmer, I had this little guy on my shoulder. I call him Elmer. Elmer's the 10% of me that's never going to get it. Okay. This is crap. This is no good. This is stupid. You shouldn't be doing, you know, all that, you know. The main thing with Elmer is he's the 5-year-old driving the car. So I have to take the keys away from Elmer and say, you know what? We're not going to do that, Elmer. We're going to go do this fifth step anyway, you know. I went over to Clint's house, and he gave me a coffee cup there with coffee in it, and inscribed on the cup is Ewell's dog. And that began my fifth step with Clint that day, you know. And I poured it all out. Then I couldn't look at him sometimes, but I poured every little bit of it out there, you know. And during that, he said to me, at one point in there, he says, "What is the matter with you?" And I started to cry. And I said, "I'm afraid." And he said, "Lucy, what are you afraid of?" And I said, "I'm afraid I'm going to be punished." I said, "I've crossed too many lines, Clint. I've done too much. I'm never going to be forgiven, you know." And so he said, "Just a moment." He got up and he went in his office and he got a piece of paper and about fear. And essentially what it said in there, it talks about, you know, I felt like my punishment was going to be this, that I could hear it in you and I could see it in you, but I was never going to be able to get it. And that was going to be my punishment for the things that I had done. I mean, can you imagine that kind of a God at 25 years sober? I mean, give me a friggin' break, you know? So he brought out this paper and we looked at it. And essentially, I went over, I had to answer all the questions on that page, you know? And one of them was like, do I know that the fear is a lie? Do I know that God can remove the fear? You know, and after I said yes to all of these things, you know, we prayed about it. And you know what? It got lifted. All of it got lifted. There's an answer here. It's like when I came off that mountaintop that night, I was healed. I don't know how to say it other than that. I am not a religious person today. If you are, great. I love that. You know, I love to go to church. I love it. I thought all of this was going to be in some huge, magnificent cathedral like St. Patrick's Square in New York. You know, you know, it's right here. When I was looking for God so hard and crying on my way to a retreat over in Sierra Madre, I heard a voice say to me, "I'm in your heart, Luther. It's only there that I may be found," you know? And I have found that to be true. I say to guys all the time that I'm sponsoring, "What does your heart say? What does your heart say?" You know, that's my barometer, because I know the truth down there. That's where God is. He can't be up here in this head. This head is way too busy. Okay. So anyway, we got rid of that, you know, and then I had to take it to the grave list. And I had something on there I had never, ever told another human being. And I couldn't look at Clint. I could not look at it. And I was reading it. I said, "Clint, I slapped a baby on it. And I slapped it so hard, I left my handprint on its face. I was babysitting. I was like 8 years old or nine. And I started to cry so hard. It was the one thing that I had done in my life that I would have given my life, I think, to undo it. You know, but I understand today in Alcoholics Anonymous that it's, if it's of any value to you, you know, I'm required to tell it to you. So he said, "Stop right there." He said, "I've listened to you." We were there from 9 in the morning till 9 that night, okay? He said, "I mean, I had a lot on my plate. I'm kind of 25 years sober. You gather a lot of dust in the, you know." So he says, "Listen, I've listened to you all day long. We had lunch together, dinner and all that, you know. And he says, I want to tell you something. You did not slap that child. You did. But you were only doing what had been done to you. He had heard about my the second stepfather. He had heard how he treated me and beat up on me and so on and so forth. And he says, you were only doing what had been done to you. That's what it is, you know." Holy crap. Well, I can't tell you the relief I had. Okay, do I wish it was something I had not done today? Yes. I'm so ashamed of it when I even tell you. But, you know, so if you've done something really nasty and dirty and awful in your life, don't hold it against you anymore. That was really another person doing all that. Once this flip, this switch gets flipped in us, there's no road back. We can't go back. There is no way back. There's, like Gertrude Stein said, there is no there there. So you ain't going anywhere. We're only going forward one day at a time. We're on the journey, you know, one day's trip here. So here, okay, so he was listening to my fifth step, and he was writing all the time he was doing it. And then after it was over with, he hands me this paper. He said, these are all the things that you told me, Luther. These are all your, what we'll call, character defects. This is your MO. This is how you operated all of your life, you know? And he said, so what I want you to do is take this list and go home with it. I want you to take the book down off the shelf, and I want you to review steps 1 through 5. I want you to see if you approve of the job you've done so far. It's the only time they ask us to do this in the book. And then if you're satisfied with that, I want you to look at this list. I want you to take this list, and I want you to turn every one of these really negative ways of doing things and turn it into something fabulous. Go for the gold ring. We're going for the very best, you know. Life is a banquet here, and it's the Father's pleasure to give you the kingdom, not the scraps from the table, okay? So we're going to go for the gold ring here. So I did that. I took all that stuff, and I went home, and I rewrote it. And I came for the gold ring, you know? And so he said, when you've done that, you bring it back here, and we'll sit down with it. So I did that. He said, you got your list with you? And I said, yeah. He says, got your old list? And I said, he said, yes. And he says, give me the old list. And so I gave him the old list. And he says, are you willing to have all these taken away right now? And I said, yes. And he crumpled them all up in a ball and threw it in the trash. That almost freaked me out, you know? And then we got down on our knees, him and me, and he put his arm around me, and we said that seventh step prayer, which concluded the open end at where we didn't say amend on step 3, and we said amen at step 7. So we completed a segment, like 1, 2, and 3, a little units. 4, 5, 6, and 7 are units, you know? And then that laid the path open for steps 8 and 9, you know? Again, we're talking about recovery. We're talking about emotional sobriety and how we got there through this gateway, you know? And that fifth step was so important because it was the cornerstone in the arch through which we passed to freedom, you know? So it was very, very important to withhold nothing, you know, for the first time in my life, to lay it all out there, you know. And so anyway, that's where we went on, you know. And so we said that little prayer on N7 where it's like, take me, Father, just as I am, warts and all. I can see me. I know who I am. I know where I came from. I know the impossibility of me being here today with you, talking about things that are way beyond me, you know. So take me, warts and all, you know. So then I was to prepare a list of amends, you know, and I was to take that out of my fourth step. And I was also to go back through old address books and things if I had them, but to search out through my past and see if there was anything that I wanted to clean up. And I got to tell you something, I had 62 amends. But that's because I had compiled so many things along the way, but 25 years of sobriety, plus all of my life, come on, you know, in all of the people that I, you know, still today, once in a while, something will come up. And I'll go to tell you something. This is one of my favorite steps because it oh my God, it was so, so rewarding, I guess is the word for it, you know, and I got so much from it, you know. I was to take 3x5 cards, and I wrote the person's name up in the left hand corner of my card and put their phone number up there. Over in the right hand corner of the 3x5 card, I was to put a minus sign, you know, and then in the body of the little card, I was to write the men's here, you know, and I had a cheat sheet as well that. That I was to call the person, make an appointment, you know, and it was not in a personal or private location. It was in a public place for obvious reasons, you know, probably for me anyway, so I didn't wind up in bed with somebody. And anyway, I was to call that person up and ask them if I could meet with them. You know, I had amends to make with these people. So I did that. Like I told you earlier, I made amends with my sister and my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law wouldn't cry if he stood on his foot for an hour, you know, and he had tears streaming down his face. And he said, Bo, you got to stop this. And I said, I can't stop this. I have to finish. I have to tell you. I have to ask you to forgive me. You know, so I went on with it. I went down to my mother and father. I got to make amends with them before they died, you know. I sat there with my mother, and she kept looking at me, and she kept listening to me, you know. Life with them, as far as I'm concerned, was a nightmare on their part, you know, with me. It's just one thing after another. And when I asked my mother that poignant question, what can I do to make this right? She looked at me and she said, you can hang around with these people. You stay with them. They brought me my boy back. You know, all the money in the world can't buy that sentence. It can't. My mother and dad forgave me. They were so generous because they saw a new person. They didn't see that old wreck. You know, my mother was standing in a doorway when talking on the phone of somebody whose husband was drunk all the time. And my mother looked at me. She was looking right in my eyes. I could hear the other person on the phone. And she said, I used to know somebody like that, but he's dead now. My God, you tell me about the gifts that we're given here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had a lot of financial amends and stuff. I had stuff to do. I went about making those as best I could. When I didn't have the money, you know, I made an agreement. I don't care if it was $10 a month. It didn't matter. Little or much is big when you're in God's world, okay? It doesn't matter. 15 cents and $15 million are the same thing to the infinite. It doesn't matter. It just is what it is, period. You know? So I went around trying to make amends and stuff. And there were places like the markets, the grocery market I worked in. You know, I stole money out of the till. I was given a job by a guy named Pete Espinosa. And how I repaid him is I stole money out of the till. You know, those places aren't even in business anymore. I don't know if I drove them out of business or what, but but they, you know, so I had a little trouble finding them. Let's see, where am I?
Pete Espinosa.
Yeah, I know where I am. Just thinking here for a minute, because I don't want to get ahead of me. I don't want to miss anything. So the money that I stole, I figured, I don't know how accurate it was, but I figured $1,500, and that was probably high, because a dollar went a long way in those days, you know. So I kept collecting this money. I didn't know what to do with it. And I got it all collected, and I started talking to Clint, and I said, I don't know what to do with this money. And I said, shall I give it to Clancy, you know, for the mission? And I thought, no, I don't want anyone to know where it came from. you know. And then I had all, and then I thought about Boys Town, blah, 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 and all that. So then, you know, I believe that God lives in Bel Air, because every time I would drive over 405, you know, and I get to Mulholland Drive, I'd hear a voice. So I'm driving over, I just passed Mulholland, and this voice says, try Herb Coddington, you know. I thought, Herb Coddington? Herb Coddington was a little minister down in South Carolina, in Clinton. My mother used to give them money, you know, and she bought an altar for them and so on and so forth, you know. And so, but I've learned to be obedient here. And I got on the phone and I called Herb up and I said, Herb, Luther, what, you may not know me or remember me or whatever, but you certainly knew my mother, because she gave them quite a little bit of money from time to time, you know. And he said, oh, I remember you very well, because I did meet him one summer when I was down there. And I said, here's the thing. I said, I've got $1,500 that I need to give away. And for some reason or another, I'm supposed to call you. And I said, this is not an esteemable act. I don't want you to send me any income tax, blah, 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 or whatever. I can take this off. It's not, this is not an esteemable act. I'm trying to right a wrong that I did. And so I said, so I don't need any correspondence from you at all, you know, after this and blah, blah, blah. So, so anyway, I was thinking about something else here is why I got distracted. I just wanted to show you this because I just wanted you to know who you're dealing with here.